This message comes from OnPoint's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you qualify, and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Eric Westervelt, and this is On Point.
Virginia State Police declared a local emergency in Charlottesville, Virginia, Saturday.
The president ultimately said, I think there's blame on both sides.
Thousands of migrant children being separated from their parents.
Children effectively are being put into dog cages.
The president today has praised the leader of North Korea, and he has attacked Canada.
None of this normal, none of this acceptable, none of this frankly stable behavior.
How did we get here? How did we lose to this guy? And how did we end up with fewer Democrats in office than at any time in decades?
That's former Obama speechwriter Jon Favreau. And that's the question his new partisan podcast, The Wilderness, attempts to answer. Just how did the Democrats lose nearly 1,000 seats across America since President Obama took office? And what will it take to get Democrats back? This hour on Point. Jon Favreau explores how Democrats might get out of the political wilderness. You can join us on air and online. Democrats, how are you feeling right now about your party? Independents, are you feeling on the fence here? And Republicans, you gloating or you have a case of buyer's remorse? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Los Angeles is Jon Favreau, host, writer, and producer of the political commentary podcast The Wilderness, a 15-part series that consults historians, voters, strategists, and politicians to try to tell the story of the Democratic Party. He was the chief speechwriter for Barack Obama from 2006 to 2013, the youngest ever White House director of speechwriting. He's also a founder and host, along with three other ex-Obama aides, of the successful podcast Pod Save America. Jon Favreau, welcome to On Point. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Eric. How are you?
I'm great. Really appreciate it. Look forward to this. I mean, the Democrats, as your title suggests, are in the wilderness, and your podcast looks at, you know, how that party got there and the way back. And you do it through the lens of history a lot of the times. I mean, where the party has been, when it faced challenges before, how it reacted, where it messed up, and when it got it right. I'm curious, what, if anything, about that lens did you get from your former job as a speechwriter?
Quite a bit of it, actually. When we started thinking about doing this podcast, you know, Pod Save America is a conversation about current events, news. It's tied to the news cycle every week. And I thought if we were going to take a look at the Democratic Party and we weren't going to tie it to the news cycle every single day, that it would be good to take a look back at how we got here. And I do remember when I used to write speeches with Barack Obama, every time we'd write work on a speech, there'd be a big section in the speech about how we got here before he talked about where we need to go from here. And I think that provides some good context because, you know, part of the problem with today's media environment, because it moves so quickly, is that you wake up every day and it's like history begins anew every right. morning. And you forget that there are a lot of decisions and transformations that got us to this place. And if we don't have that history as context, it becomes a lot more difficult to figure out how we move on to the next thing.
Well, and that history as context, you know, can be vital, actually, when President Trump has really been shown to be masterful at controlling the narrative and driving the news cycles, as you say, a new history begins anew every day. And you sometimes in your podcast point a finger at the media, you know, as well. But the Democrats, you know, often frame their message, it seems to me, in opposition to the president, against him, rather than what they're for. Do you think that's the case? Is there more to do in framing what the party stands for as opposed to just we're not in agreement with what he's doing?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think some of that is, as you mentioned, Trump's ability to control the news cycle. And first of all, any president's ability to control the news cycle, right? When a party's out of power, the party doesn't have the White House, it's harder to get your message through and to have it break through. And the president has a bully pulpit, and so he has an ability to control the news narrative, and President Trump is better at that than most presidents. And so, yeah, I think the Democrats have a hard time breaking through. I think if you look on the ground at the various races the Democrats are running right now, they are talking about what they're for. They are talking about their vision for the future. They're talking about their policy agenda. We don't always see that come through in the news coverage, or at least in the national news coverage. I think you actually see it a lot more in some of the local news coverage. But I do think Democrats are doing a better job of talking about what they're for than you might think from sort of the political narrative. Yet, I also think that you know, Democrats can never be too good at talking about what they're for. I think it's super important to give voters a reason to vote for something, because look, a lot of voters in this country, most voters in this country, have made up their minds about Donald Trump. They either like him or they don't like him. There's not a lot of people who are in between on Donald Trump right now. So right. That's already out there. And I think you can remind people of the damage he's caused, of the stakes in the election, of what might happen if Trump and the Republicans keep power. That's all fine. But just constantly attacking Trump all the time, you know, that's just... I think Democrats would be wise to use their energy talking about the policies they're proposing that would actually fix problems in the country and improve people's lives.
Yeah, so some of that might break through through to the narrative if it's not right now. Let's take a look at some of the history that you delve into in your podcast. This is from the trailer to The Wilderness, a montage of speeches which define the Democratic Party's ideals.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
The great society rests on abundance and liberty for all.
The time for racial discrimination is over.
We no longer can have a country where I worry about me, you worry about you, they worry about them.
The party of Roosevelt and Kennedy has always made the biggest difference when we summon the entire nation to a common purpose, a higher purpose.
John, the party of Roosevelt and Kennedy in your episode, you know, the voters, where you ask focus groups and voters, you know, nationwide, you know, what is wrong with the Democrats party right now is pretty devastating. I mean, common themes that come out: no backbone, no balls, no message, too corporatist, too old, too centrist, wishy-washy, visionless, poll-driven. I mean, as a Democratic activist, it must be a little hard to hear in contrast to the soaring rhetoric of the party's leaders.
Well, I spend far too much time on Twitter, so I've heard it all before.
Right.
But no, look, those comments reflect a lot of, you know, the prevailing narrative out there, and so, you know, I wasn't completely surprised. We did this two ways with that episode. We asked people to call in and leave voicemails, which was great, and then I also did focus groups because I wanted some, you know, scientific surveys and that weren't just sort of like random voicemails. And so I sat down with voters outside of Detroit, and I sat down with voters outside of Houston. And I picked two specific groups of people. In Michigan, we had Obama-Trump voters. So these were people who voted for Barack Obama in 2008, 2012, and then decided to vote for Donald Trump in 2016. And then in Houston, outside of Houston, I sat down with people who had voted for Obama in 08 and 12, and then in 16, they either decided to stay home or they decided to vote for a third party. And what I found from talking to those people, it was interesting, in Michigan at least, not one of the voters who cast their ballot for Donald Trump is happy with their vote and want to do it again. And so that was, from my perspective, that was good news. And yet, there wasn't a lot of passion and energy for Democrats. There wasn't a lot of anger at Democrats. There wasn't a lot of huge disappointment with Democrats. Really, it was a disappointment with politics in general. So what you'd hear from a lot of these voters is, you know, I think the Democrats are better, and I don't like Trump, and I thought Trump would be a lot better than he is, you know, when I voted for him. But I just think that both parties are pretty awful right now. And, you know, I think Republicans are worse than Democrats, but Democrats haven't made much of a difference in my life either.
So heading into this kind of disappointment, but also a malaise, a sense that neither is doing a good job.
that neither is doing a good job. And, you know, I asked these people, too, if you, you know, who was the last Democratic politician you did get excited about? One woman said that, you know, Jimmy Carter was the last vote that she was really excited about. But then most of them actually said that they were excited to vote for Barack Obama. And then I said, you know, would you have voted for him a third time if you could? And most of them said that they would have voted for him again if he was on the ballot in 2016 over Donald Trump. And yet, their approval of Barack Obama, you know, it was personal in nature. It wasn't about the Democratic Party. It was, he's a good man. He was a good family man. He tried really hard. Some of them appreciated the Affordable Care Act at this point. And yet they still didn't think that Obama and the Democrats, when they were in power, really fundamentally transformed the economy in a way that would improve their lives. And that's something that I heard over and over again from a lot of the more disaffected voters.
Talking with Jon Favreau, host, writer, and producer of the new political podcast, The Wilderness. Cheryl is calling from New Orleans. Cheryl, are you happy with the Democrats now?
Yeah, hi. Okay, so this is my comment, and I completely agree with you on 2016 as far as Democrats being really the fault that of why Trump is in power, is because the Democrats were disengaged, apathetic, maybe even overconfident, and they were split too, okay? You had your Bernie or Busters,
sure,
who were angry, and so on. So, but I don't agree with the attitude now, okay? I'm curious to find out when he did this survey to find out, you know, what I think that Trump is a motivator for a lot of Democrats and also independents that may be either in the middle or toward the left.
Thanks, Cheryl. We'll get Jon Favreau to answer that coming up. You know, has Trump been the best thing that's happened to the Democratic Party? Are they really in the wilderness? We're talking to former Obama speechwriter Jon Favreau about his new political commentary podcast, The Wilderness. You can join the conversation. Are the Democrats looking feckless and weak heading into the midterms, or is there energy? What's the party's message? Is it vision? I'm Eric Westervelt. You're listening to On Point.
This message comes from On Point's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
Hey, Asma.
Hey, Scott.
Another crazy week. We've got North Korea.
Yep, we got Russia.
Midterms.
And, of course, President Trump. And what happens whenever there is crazy news that erupts? We pop into the studio and break it down to make sense.
So if you see a headline,
we've discussed it.
It's the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to On Point. I'm Eric Westervelt. We're talking about the new podcast, The Wilderness, which tells the tale of how the Democratic Party lost its way politically. You can join the conversation. Why do you think President Trump won the election? What does it say about the Democrats today? What are you seeing out there that you like, that you don't? Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We have with us Jon Favreau, former Obama chief speechwriter, host of Pod Save America, and host of the new political commentary podcast, The Wilderness. And here's something from episode 3 called The Nightmare about the aftermath of the election of President Trump.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
Why do you have to lose? You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. What the hell do you have to lose?
We lost the most winnable open presidential race in modern American history. It was so winnable.
Jon Favreau, it was so winnable, as your podcast puts it. And Cheryl, before the break, was saying, look, I don't feel like the Democratic Party is really that in the wilderness. President Trump is giving new fuel and energy. And I guess I want to ask you, do you think the party right now, in reaction to Trump, is delivering a coherent, you know, message to the nation, to its base, ahead of the midterm elections?
I think we're getting there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been saying that, you know, we may be in the wilderness, but we are not completely lost. And, you know, the silver lining here is, and you were saying this before the break, that Donald Trump has been a huge motivator for Democrats in a way that I haven't seen since the early days of the Obama campaign. And he's also been one of the best, recruitment tools that Democrats have ever had in terms of people running for office. I mean, mm-hmm. we have a record number of people running for office. I think we are fielding Democratic candidates in every single congressional district, but maybe a couple, which is unheard of. There's a record number of women running for office, winning the primaries, record number of people of color running and winning in these primaries as well. Democrats have outperformed the partisan average in a lot of these special elections by about 8% so far. So I do think there's a new grassroots energy in the party, and I think the challenge for the Democrats will be, can we capture that grassroots energy and enthusiasm and translate it into victory at the ballot box in 2018 and then, of course, in 2020? And, you know, that remains to be seen, but I think the Democrats are certainly on their way, and I think, you know, we're learning a lot of the lessons that from 2016 and from before that.
Jake is calling from Boston. Jake, do you see a new grassroots energy you're excited about, or are you worried?
I do see a lot of, movement caused by Trump towards the Democratic Party. But I'm afraid that the movement is pushing us in a direction that is unwinnable. I think a vast majority of the country identifies as center liberal, and the way the rhetoric and the kind of direction that we've been going, that tells me that we will never, ever take the country back. You know, there are certain things that the Democratic Party and the left has become, to represent in the years since Trump won. And honestly, I just don't see them as being things that we'll ever be able to pull the middle of the country towards, like abolishite or gender as a social construct. These are radical ideas. And frankly, I think the majority of the country hates Trump or does not like Trump, hate maybe a strong word, but they are not ready for these kinds of policy prescriptions. So I'm frankly terrified. I voted for Hillary Clinton. I identify as a Democrat, but I don't believe this is a winning strategy.
Jake, thanks for your call. That's a really good point. And John, I want to get you respond to that. He's saying he's excited about the grassroots energy, but worried that abolish ICE, transgender rights, social agendas, it risks going too far and in 2020 alienating voters again.
You know, I'm not as concerned about that, and I'll tell you why. I think that there are certain candidates in certain districts for whom policies like abolish ICE, are going to work. They're going to find a lot of appeal in those districts. Certainly, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez winning in a deep blue district in the Bronx is going to find a lot of support for that. Danny O'Connor, who ran in the Ohio 12th against Troy Balderson, obviously a much more conservative district, a district that went for Trump and Romney by about 11 points. He fell short by 1,000 votes. They're still counting votes at this moment. So he should have never been close in this race. Hmm. He was saying, he's like, when I go door to door and talk to people, I've been talking to people for months and months and months. Not one person has mentioned abolish ICE. Not one person has mentioned any of these, issues that are supposedly dragging the party to the left. He was talking to people about healthcare, about jobs, about infrastructure. Mm-hmm. I also think that especially on economic issues, I know the caller was speaking about more social and cultural issues, but on economic issues, what we found and what a lot of polls have found is that voters are much more economically populist and progressive than the Congress that we have right now. And so when you look at support for a federal jobs guarantee, Medicare for all, tuition-free college, these policy proposals are very popular. They have majority support in most congressional districts across the country. And so part of this is, Democrats, they get stuck worried about a narrative that the right creates for them, that they see on Fox News and that trickles down through, you know, Breitbart and all these different places and into the mainstream media as well. And so when Democrats see that on TV, they think, oh, God, the party's getting dragged to the left and it's going to be problematic. But when you talk to candidates and activists who are on the ground, you don't hear that same fear, the people who are actually running in these races. I mean, Connor Lamb won in an extremely conservative district in western Pennsylvania, and he won in the middle of the party talking about abolish ICE and immigration and transgender rights and all these things that the caller was worried about, and it didn't create any kind of problem for him whatsoever. He ran his race and he won.
We're talking with Jon Favreau, host of the new political commentary podcast, The Wilderness. Evan is calling from Rhode Island. Evan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having my call. I really disagree with that last caller. I think that the Democratic Party these days has been, the leaders at least, have been moving more and more to the right, while the base is moving more and more to the left. I know many of my peers kind of scoff at the Democratic Party these days because they don't feel that they're doing enough. They're far enough on the left. I think we need to embrace platforms like the Democratic Socialists of America. And I very much agree with what John was saying, that, Medicare for All is extremely popular and workers' rights and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I very much disagree with the last caller and very much agree with John.
All right. Thanks, Evan. I appreciate it. And John, to Evan's point, I do want to point out, I mean, some Democratic pundits certainly try to frame the debate sometimes as, look, the way forward for this party is something of an either-or debate. You know, do more to reach out to the working class, white Democrats who felt alienated and voted for Trump and who feel left behind in a new economy. And other Democrats say, no, you know, you need to reach out to the young, the poor, minorities, the disadvantaged people the Democrats have championed for a long time. I'm curious your take on the sort of talk-about-it-all approach as opposed to picking one point.
Yeah, no, I don't think that we should sort of have different messages for different groups, and I don't think we need to. I think, and this is what I sort of found when I spoke to these voters in Michigan and Texas, you know, and obviously both groups of voters were very different demographically. Both groups of voters wanted were just tired of the government, whichever party was in power, not doing anything to actually improve their lives. And so when I talked about what you actually want to see out of your politicians, what you want to see out of your leaders, they said they want them to do something about the fact that I can't afford health care. I want them to do something about the fact that the highways that I drive in are in disrepair right now. I want them to do something about the fact that I can't figure out how to send my kids to college. Or if it was a younger person in Texas, I want to figure out how I can go to college or I can get my next degree. And so a message about, you know, and I think especially a lot of these concerns are economic, even though we're supposedly in, you know, the greatest economy of our lifetime, according to Donald Trump. Most people don't feel that way in their own lives. At least a lot of the voters that we're talking about, the swing voters, you know, is it, whether it's the Obama-Trump voters or a lot of these younger voters who are disaffected by both parties and disaffected by politics in general, they do have a lot of economic concerns. And I also think that the debate between economic concerns, class concerns, and identity politics is also overblown, because a lot about what people are talking about with quote-unquote identity politics has to do with material improvements in their own lives, right? And, you know, whether it's mass incarceration, whether it's a woman's right to choose, these all are tied into economic issues as well, too. So I think it's sort of all part of a whole, and I think that Democrats need a message. I mean, the last two callers were interesting because they sort of illustrated the challenge in the party. The first caller said he voted for Hillary Clinton, identifies as a Democrat, and the second caller is a Democrat, too. They have very different views. They disagree. Right. We're a Big Ten party, and we're going to need to have to be open to many different views while also maintaining a central cohesive message, and I think that's the main challenge for Democrats.
Yeah, those callers got to the crux of the split. One thing that's not overblown, we get a lot of comments, we're getting one right on our website now, is the idea that the Democrats need to learn to throw a punch more. Democrats, this listener writes, need to learn that American politics is indeed a contact sport. They need to stiffen their message and speak with one voice. That's what Republicans have been doing, and you can see they've done remarkably well. I guess your take on the need to kind of learn to throw a punch. Politics.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that I do think that one thing you hear from voters is they're sort of tired of politics as a blood sport. And they're tired of politicians just yelling at each other for no reason and trading insults for no reason. I think where Democrats have to learn to throw a punch is to be unafraid to stand for the issues that you believe in and to speak clearly and boldly about the policies that you are proposing. And so I think that Democrats should not back down from that. You know, I tell you, there's a theme in a lot of these different episodes, whether it's the episode on immigration or on foreign policy, where historically Democrats have gotten into trouble because they're afraid of some issue. They're afraid of talking about immigration because, you know, what if voters in the middle of the country don't like their immigration policies? They're afraid about talking about what they believe on national security because Republicans are going to paint them as soft on terrorism. That, I think, Democrats should not be afraid of. And I think when we look through history, where Democrats have been afraid, where they've been cautious and calculating and have pulled back, that's where the party has gotten into trouble. And I think you go out there, you say what you believe, you you say it confidently, you say it boldly, and you let the chips fall where they may, because people can tell, if voters can tell, if you are truly believe in what you're talking about, or if you're just saying something because you believe that it's politically popular or that you're trying to trim your sails a little bit to win this voting group and that voting group. Voters can tell that. And so I think it's better to be bold and to be unafraid. And if people don't agree with you, you know, they'll at least give you credit for standing up on your principles.
Say it confidently, say it boldly. Here are some thoughts from your podcast from Cecilia Munoz, who was the director of the White House Domestic Policy Council under President Obama, on the Democratic Party's problems with immigration policy. This is from episode 7.
Democrats should position themselves as the people who can fix the problem. We can have an immigration system that provides for our national security. The one we have right now is not it. It's broken. So you can be pro-security, pro-jobs for Americans, pro-all of the things you need to be, and before immigration reform, but you have to be willing to lean into the argument. The problem is that a lot of our Democrats absolutely panic over this stuff. They're not comfortable with it, and they're not willing to get comfortable with it, and that's why we got clobbered over the shutdown.
Jon Favreau, Democrats, too often, she says, not comfortable with standing up and speaking confidently and boldly about immigration. And former President Obama arguably, you know, expended a lot of his political capital on the Affordable Care Act and then didn't have the power to do much on immigration.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the reasons he didn't, and we talk about this in that episode, and Cecilia was the point person on immigration in the White House, and she's also been an activist in the issue for many, many years. You know, we tried to pass the DREAM Act in 2010, and Obama went to the mat for it, and we even had some Republican support, and it fell 5 votes short in the Senate. And 5 votes short in the Senate was exactly the number of red state conservative Democrats who didn't vote for the DREAM Act. And so there are a lot of Democrats in red states who think that if they are for comprehensive immigration reform, if they're for a path to citizenship for Dreamers or for undocumented immigrants, that that's going to be a political problem for them. And I don't think the evidence suggests that's true. I mean, look at Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown is in the state of Ohio, senator from Ohio. He is, you know, his main message is economic populism. That's what he talks about. And that's why, you know, people in Ohio love him. And yet he's also very progressive on issues like immigration, a woman's right to choose, gun control, in a state like Ohio that's pretty conservative. And, you know, he's been elected and reelected, and now he's has a comfortable lead on his challenger. And, you know, Democrats like that prove that you can stand by your beliefs on issues like immigration and yet still focus all your energy and your message on, you know, materially improving people's lives. And that's not contradictory, and it can still work.
The Future of the Democratic Party with Jon Favreau, host of the new political podcast, The Wilderness. Kathy is calling from Colchester, Vermont. Kathy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Eric. This has been an enlightening conversation. I appreciate what John is doing, sort of bringing this together on a national level. I personally am in a state that supports ethics and honesty and strong democratic values. I think reading about other states, it's happening at the local level. I think our government is surgically being excised and made too small. And I think so many of us have become aware of how important it is to have our policies, follow protocol, have people who are informed in charge of, well, Secretary of State's in charge of certain agencies. So I'm really looking forward to the Democrats coming forward in the fall.
Kathy,
and I still will go out and be calling.
Kathy, thanks for your call. John, to her point, I mean, maybe the energy is at the local level.
Absolutely, it is. And that's one thing that we discover in some of the later episodes. We talk about the party and the recruitment efforts. And it is clear that most of the energy right now is at the grassroots and people running for these local offices, which is very exciting.
More to come. How can the Democratic Party get back on track? We're speaking with Jon Favreau, host of The Wilderness. I'm Eric Westervelt. You're listening to On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Did cutting taxes actually grow the economy?
And what makes DJ Khaled the king of pop music?
The Indicator, a daily podcast where we tackle the big economic questions.
You're listening to On Point. I'm Eric Westervelt. We're talking about how the Democratic Party has lost its way, as explored in the new partisan podcast, The Wilderness. You can join the conversation. Democrats, what bothers you the most about your party right now? Do you think it can be fixed? How? We have with us former Obama speechwriter and host of Pod Save America, Jon Favreau, about his new podcast, The Wilderness. And Jon, I want to ask you, I mean, President Trump regularly blasts the media as fake, biased, and of course, as he likes to say, the enemy of the people. But you take aim a little bit at the mainstream media in The Wilderness. You think the media has become too obsessed with balance and fairness.
Yeah, I mean, fairness is okay. but
we'll take a little fairness.
Balance I worry about, because I do think that, especially in the mainstream media now, look, Republicans for and conservatives for 20, 30 years now have screamed about liberal bias, and it has been a bad faith argument to work the refs, so that in a lot of newsrooms and a lot of editors think to themselves, okay, how do I make sure that I do not get accused of liberal bias? And I think that balance is something that, you know, it's important to strive for, but I think that truth is the most important thing to strive for. And I think, and I worry that sometimes when balance and truth are in conflict, that balance becomes the top priority sometimes in the media. And I don't think that necessarily helps the situation that much. But I also think it's more than balance that's a problem with our media environment today. It's that the environment is so sped up. There are so many different forms of content. There's so much competition for eyeballs that a lot of times the political coverage tends towards the sensational, towards the trivial, towards personality, towards conflict, towards characters, all the things that make for, you know, interesting stories. And the problem is what gets lost in that kind of coverage is debates about policy and substance. And I believe that disadvantages the party that's trying to tell people that government and government action could improve people's lives.
Right.
More so than Republicans who are saying, you know, we actually don't need government and everyone can sort of go off and do their own thing. And so I do think that Democrats have to figure out how to get their message through a very fractured media environment that has changed dramatically over the last decade. And
your party is up against a man who's proving to be masterful at, you know, manipulating the sensational and the dramatic and driving the narrative.
Yeah, well, I mean, he is a a cable news watcher who became president. You know, he's a Fox fan who found himself in the Oval Office. So he knows this media environment very well, and he also knows the New York tabloid culture very well because he's a New Yorker. And so he is very adept at managing this kind of media environment that's driven by sensationalism and celebrity and all that. Mm. And I think that advantages him, has advantaged him so far.
Another commentator on our website says, if Democrats could offer some ideological leadership, they'd win election after election. Instead, they just listen to multimillion-dollar advertisers turned pollsters who claim to try to understand what Americans really want. And that became a theme during the battle between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Jon Favreau, has the party become so out of a touch, so beholden to Wall Street, too corporatist and elitist?
Well, I will say, I mean, you mentioned consultants. I worked with some, you know, fantastic consultants on the Obama campaign. Some of them are on The Wilderness, David Axelrod, Joel Benenson, David Plouffe, David Binder, Celinda Lake. But I will say that almost everyone I talked to for The Wilderness, including some of the consultants I talked to, brought up consultants as a problem with the party. And I think that one thing that has happened with the party, and it's probably happened with the Republican Party as well, is that the longer you're in power, and especially when the party in power has the White House, Washington sort of becomes the center of the universe for that party. And so when you're looking to strategy for the party, you're looking to the consultants who are in Washington, you're looking to the party committees that are in Washington, and you don't pay enough attention to what's going on in the country. You don't pay enough attention to the grassroots, to the local organizers, to people who are outside of Washington who have ideas about where the party should go. And so I do think that we've been a little too captive to, consultants who've been in D.C. and who've been doing this for a long time. And they might have every good intention. And they might be very smart people, but I think you need a diversity of viewpoints, geographically, in terms of making sure there's more women and people of color who are running the party and who are being consultants. And I think that that's incredibly important if you want to know what's going on in the rest of the country.
Angela from New Orleans, you're on.
Hi, Eric. This may seem oversimplistic, but it's just something that I consider. I identify as an independent. I've been voting for almost 30 years, have always voted independent whenever possible. And it just seems like the pendulum swings, obviously, and each time it swings now, it's harder, faster, and further than the previous time. And we're definitely experiencing the end of that pendulum swinging. Hopefully it goes back very quickly. And it just really kind of hurts my heart when I heard the gentleman, I think it was Mr. Favreau, say, you know, this race was so winnable, because though I did not vote for Trump, even though all of my Democratic friends think I'm a closet conservative because I also didn't vote for Hillary, I saw it coming. I was like, this guy has, for me, the race was so winnable for him. And so just in the process of the pendulum swinging, a lot of things are overlooked. And I just enjoy Mr. Favreau and everything he said today. He just has a lot of great information and a lot of great content.
Thanks for your call. I mean, John, there's a lot of youthful new energy. You have mentioned in the party that surprise congressional primary victory in New York by the 28-year-old Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, young, dynamic, leftist, and she beat the number four Democrat in the House, Joseph Crowley. I mean, I'm curious, what do you make of that, especially given that on the other side, you also have, the other end, you have 84-year-old Democrat Dianne Feinstein running for yet another term. Nancy Pelosi, I believe, is 78 years old. So it's a mix there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to make it too much about age, because I think there are some older Democrats in Congress who've been fantastic. But I do think that, if this party wants to lead into the future, that we do need to capture more youthful energy in the party. And I think, and it's not just age either, it's people who haven't been in politics their whole lives. It's people who haven't served in Washington their whole lives. I mean, look, this is one of the reasons that Barack Obama won in 2008, right? Everyone said, oh, he's a state senator from Illinois. The guy's name is Barack Hussein Obama. There's no chance that this country would ever elect him. But one of the reasons that people found him so appealing is because he didn't feel like Washington. He didn't sound like Washington. He didn't sound like, you know, he was spitting out talking points that had been poll tested to death. And I do think, and if you look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, if you look at some of these new candidates all across the country who've been winning in these Democratic primaries, I think there's a couple things they have in common. One, they are bolder in their policy proposals, whether it's Medicare for all, whether it's tuition-free college, whether it's $15 minimum wage. And these aren't just the socialist Democrats either, Democratic socialists either. These are, you know, a lot of the progressive Democrats who are so-called establishment Democrats who are proposing some of these policies. So they're bold on progressive policy. And the other thing is that they are young, and they haven't been in politics forever, and they haven't been in Washington forever. And so they bring this sort of fresh, new voice that sounds authentic and real and doesn't seem like a typical politician. And I think that's what people are hungry for in this country right now.
Youth and energy and bolder on progressive policy proposals. Kristen is calling from Hanover, New Hampshire. Welcome to On Point.
How's it going?
I'm good. What's your sense? Is the party in the right, going the right way?
If you're a Trump voter, sure it is. You guys are going to put Trump in office for four more years if someone doesn't just wake up and stop just speaking to each other. The people who put Trump in office are not the radicals who are, you know, who you portray all the time. They're the regular people who voted for Obama twice, who didn't get anything he promised, who got sick of it, saw a crazy lady calling them deplorable, and decided, what the hell, he can't be worse than that. That's, and you're missing it. You're still missing it. I spend every day immersed in the far left. One of our professors wrote the Antifa handbook. If Antifa and Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi are the face of the Democrat Party, well, get out your welcome baskets because Trump's going to be there for four more years. Regular, normal, working people can't stomach people who tear apart cities, say to attack mothers with children out to dinner or young aides who are out, you know, going to the movies with their boyfriends because they happen to work for the current administration. That's just the truth.
Kristen, are you registered Democrat, Republican, Independent? What? I'm curious.
Yeah, in Vermont, I'll have to tell you, you know.
Okay, well, thanks for your call. John, to Kristen's point, saying, you know, you Democrats don't really get it still. You're talking to each other, not to us working folks.
Yeah, I mean, look, I, you know, like I said, I talked to a bunch of Trump voters, and they, you know, they didn't quite have the anger that the last caller just had on a lot about the Democratic Party. Like I said, it's not to say that they were all sitting around the table saying, oh, we love Democrats. They didn't say that, you know. But it was much more of a, you know, you didn't hear anything about Maxine Waters and Antifa and any of that stuff. What you heard is, it doesn't seem like anyone in Washington in either party is speaking to me or doing anything that would benefit my life. And they all thought that maybe Trump would be that person. And they didn't, you know, they didn't have a lot of love for Hillary Clinton. That's true. But it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't anger. It was just general disappointment. Like, you know, I thought Trump was going to be different. He was going to be this business guy who shook up Washington and changed things, and he didn't. And now he seems like he's just in it for himself, just like all the rest of the politicians. They're all in it for themselves. And one of the things is, I mean, that last caller seems like she pays very close attention to politics. She had a lot of different, you know, stories and anecdotes you hear about on a lot of conservative media. But a lot of the people I spoke to who were Trump voters, they just don't pay that much attention to politics. They don't follow the news super closely because their lives are busy and they have a lot of other things to do. And so all they know is that there's a bunch of people yelling at each other in Washington and nothing ever comes out of it for them. And they are looking for someone who's going to say, I know what's going on in your life. I know how to fix it. And I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can and fight as hard as I possibly can to do something about it.
But Kristen's anger gets to a point, John, that you know, during the election, Hillary Clinton, you know, many say did not do enough to reach out to working class Democrats. She didn't step foot in some states nearly enough. And yeah. That does the party risk repeating that again?
Yeah, they certainly do. I just, yeah, they. I think anyone who ran again, who runs in 2020, I think if, you know, if Hillary were to do it all over again, she would probably work even harder to reach out to working people to go to those states. You know, but there is a challenge. I remember Hillary Clinton and the campaign took this bus tour through the Rust Belt right after the convention. They went to West Virginia. They went to a lot of these states. And they got these great local coverage. Hillary talking about the economy everywhere. Never broke through the national media environment because it was right around when, after the convention, Trump started attacking the parents of a fallen Muslim soldier. And this is the kind of way that sort of Trump sort of sucks up all the oxygen in the national media environment, and Democrats can't break through with their economic message. And so I think what that means for Democrats is they have to be much more creative in figuring out how to break through with that economic message. And that's not always going to be through the mainstream media. Sometimes that's going to be through their own media channels, through their own communications channels, and just through creative ways of messaging.
Let's take some more calls. Steve is calling from Detroit. Steve, what are your concerns?
Hi, Eric. Hi, John. I just want to comment on something John actually continues to say about the Democratic Party, which now is very real to me, and that is the Democrats need to provide solutions to people's problems. For instance, I have a daughter who's a senior this year, and I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to get $140,000 to pay her tuition at the University of Michigan. And every time a national politician says, you know, I think the government ought to provide tuition-free college, my ears perk up. And until I had this looming problem, comments like that from politicians were just tropes. But let me tell you, they got my vote, and then that expands out to the entire gamut of people's problems. You know, where does my neighbor come up with $50,000 for a back surgery? Well, Medicare for all, et cetera, et cetera. And Ocasio-Cortez is saying the same things, and that's why she won, and that's what the Democrats had better do, or we're going to continue to lose.
Thanks for your call, Steve. John, he's saying specific problems to, you know, solutions to real world problems. It's still the economy.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, that's the perfect example of, you know, everything we've been talking about and all the conclusions we came to in the wilderness. Is that there are people, well, all of this crap is going on in Washington while the Trump circus is going on, you know. Meanwhile, the Trump circus is going on. Betsy DeVos, as education secretary, the other day was saying they're going to pull back on college loan forgiveness that Obama put in place so that some of these students who've racked up a lot of loans and a lot of debt after college, that we would forgive some of those loans. And they're pulling back on that. And I think Democrats have to go out there and be like, it is absurd that we expect people in this country to go find a job that pays enough to keep you out of poverty. To get that job, you need a higher education. And if we're going to say that higher education is, you're going to have to, families are going to have to shell out $100,000, $200,000 to send their kids to college on an average salary, and also, like he said, you know, pay tens of thousands of dollars if you need back surgery, that's insane. And if the government can't get together and do something, if we can't come together as a country and do something about that, in the richest country on earth, with massive inequality, with CEOs making 500 times what the average worker is making, then we're going to have situations, we're going to, you know, have situations like we have now. So
whatever party you are part of, check out Jon Favreau's new podcast, The Wilderness. John, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Eric Westervelt. You've been listening to On Point.